up, everybody? Welcome into another Talk to Me Tuesday night.
We're hanging out with Toomey with Talk to Me Podcast. This is Dave from Dead.
And there we go. What's up, Mike? How are we doing?
How you doing, man? Can you hear me all right?
I got you good. Loud and clear, sir. Some technical difficulties getting into here, right?
Everything would connect at my house except my laptop.
Nice. Sounds about right with the
never happened before, but of course it happens right when I need it. But I don't know what I did, but I got it working.
You're supposed to be a technical genius, man.
Yeah, well, sometimes technologies don't work the way they should. But hey, I got it working.
There you go. And that's all that matters, man. Well, like I was telling the fans earlier, the new album, Dealing with Demons, I guess a volume, and we lost my, oh, there he is. Okay. Dealing with Demons, volume one, out October 2nd, man. I'm loving it. If you love Devil Driver, you're going to love this one, man. So it's a fantastic album.
Sorry. I'm trying to get things right over here. So, what were you saying about Dealing with Demons?
Fantastic album. If you're a Devil Driver fan, you're going to love it. I didn't even realize that Nest of Vipers was the single until I got into a little bit more, because every time Nest of Vipers comes on, I'm like, man, I see this song being played in front of a festival crowd with the entire crowd singing that guitar line back at you, man. It's just such a cool tune.
Yeah, well, it's the third single. But well, it was are you one of the people that's heard the whole record?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Okay, yeah, cool. I got.
You got the advanced copy.
Yeah, they sent it out yesterday with like super strict warnings. Like if this gets out, we're coming after you. Yeah, they sent it out yesterday, but I grilled out listening to it last night and listened to it at work today. So great grilling album and a great work album. So there you go.
Nice. Glad you like it.
That's cool, man. So tell me about Nest of Vipers, man. What is that noise at the beginning? Is that a guitar? What instrument is that at the very beginning?
You know what? Honestly, I have no idea. God, I would have to listen to it again to find out. Hold on a second. Let me pull it up.
All right.
While I'm pulling it up, though, this is actually more of a Neil song. He wrote a majority of it.
Okay.
And let's see here. Technology is just not on my side today.
Yeah, there's some sort of strange.
Oh, that's just one of Steve Evett's guitar pedals or a couple linked together.
Okay.
He's got a big old rack in his studio right behind where you sit of just pedals and pedals and pedals and pedals.
Oh, so I didn't even see Steve. Yeah, I didn't see that Steve Evans did this one, man. What a great producer.
He is a great producer. Yeah, he did our Outlaws record, and because of how well we worked together with him on that one, we decided to do this one with him as well.
It's been a while since you and I have seen each other. We actually sat down here in Louisville and did a nice little interview there and kept in touch over the years, man. But with where am I going with this? The the success of Devil Driver the last few years, man, kind of having to come to a grinding halt with the pandemic and stuff. Did that help or hurt you? Kind of getting this album together. You know, were you guys planning on taking time off to do a record, or was it stop touring, do a record? How are we looking on this one?
The record was done long before the pandemic hit. Long before. That record, both of the records have been done for the better part of a year.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I'm sure a lot of people get that impression because of Keep Away From Me, but Keep Away From Me, the whole song was written and recorded a good year before the pandemic hit. It just works. No, it just works. That song had already been chosen to be the first single before the pandemic hit. It's just a weird coincidence.
Well, Dez has always kind of been a social distancer to begin with, you know?
Yeah, the song is... I'm not even 100% sure if that song is about a particular person or a group of people, or maybe just, you know, it could be about multiple things, that something happened in Dez's life, but it's not about the pandemic.
It's about his own personal pandemic.
Maybe. But the video is the way it was because of the pandemic. But yeah, it is just, like I said, one of those weird coincidences that it just kind of tied into all the bullshit that's going on right now. The title, anyway.
Now, I had Dez on during the Outlaws record. For you, how was doing the Outlaws record, you know, kind of taking those old country standards and tracks like that and turning them heavy? You know, was that a challenge for you?
Not really. It was fun. Actually, I think it was a little bit easier to, it's a little easier to do than writing a record from scratch of original material, because the idea is already there. You know, you've got your colors and you got your canvas and it's all kind of laid out for you. It's just your own interpretation of it. And it was fun. You know, I got to record all the guitars and bass on that record at my studio, and we kind of did things a little bit backwards on that. We did the drums after we did the guitars and the bass. So Neil and I did everything here first, and then we sent it to Steve, and he, you know, Austin went down to his studio to do it, and then Dez finished it up at his house and just outside of Temecula in California. But yeah, it was fun, you know, and we got a lot of guest people on it. You know, it was just one of those things that we wanted to do for fun, you know. And Dez's idea originally was to do a album of punk covers, and I like punk, but I'm not a huge punk fan, except for a few bands here and there, like, you know, the Misfits, and there's a couple others, but
right.
I didn't think, you know, we did this thing with oh my God, what's the name of the band? Help me out here. Henry Rollins.
Black Flag?
Thank you. Jesus. Okay. Dude, I just got home. I rushed here. I was having internet problems. Like, I'm just starting to mellow out from it. I just got done with a 4-hour drive. Driving through LA, which was not fun. So anyway, we did this thing,
like,
many
3 miles, 4 hours and 3 miles.
Yeah. Many years ago, we did a bunch of songs, a Black Flag songs, for some kind of anniversary, I think it was, and we performed at the Golden Gods, and we had, like, Jamie Josta, who else, Max Cavalera, Dez sang on a song, and another guy that used to be a pro skater that sings for Black Flag sometimes, they all did a song with us, and it was fun, but the songs are so incredibly simple compared to what I'm used to doing with Devil Driver that I kind of reverted back to that when Dez suggested doing, you know, a covers record of punk songs, and I was just like, I don't know if I can make them interesting or not, you know, they're so simple, and it's like, I don't think a lot of punk bands, it's not meant to be technical, and and it's supposed, the simplicity is what's cool about it. And I, you know, I was kind of, at the time, I just barely started listening to a fair amount of outlaw country. So I made that suggestion to Dez, knowing that he would say yes, because he loves that stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I just told him, you know, it'd be a lot easier for me and Neil to rewrite country songs than punk songs. There's just so much more in there in the songs that we picked. And I'd rather, you know, punk and metal are kind of like cousins, you know? It's, and I just don't think I could have made those punk songs cool. You know, I'm sure a lot of people don't think the country songs are cool either, but I think they're cool.
No, I had a lot of fun. I mean, the one thing like Metallica, when they take like an old punk song and Metallicaize it or whatever, make it a metal song. I know that Kirk has always talked about having to go back and write solos to the punk songs and kind of make them Metallica songs. And I think the Metallica is one of the greatest cover bands of all time. You know, when they do a cover, they do it, you know, they do it well. So, and I think Lamb of God's kind of punk cover album they did, as Burn the Priest recently, wasn't too bad. So, I mean, it can be done, as I guess is what I'm saying.
It can be done, but for me, going the country route, there's a lot more there for me to work with. And in Neil's case, we kind of had this weird dynamic where he would take songs that really didn't have a whole lot to offer, like Whiskey River, and the song is completely different. I mean, that song might as well be an original with just the Whiskey River lyrics over it. But a lot of the songs that he came to the table with and, you know, was rewriting on his end were more like originals, where I tried to, but the songs that I rewrote were more, you know, like in the vein of Sale.
Yeah.
That, you know, the Able Nation song that we did, like it's done. It sounds like Devil Driver, but it's pretty true to the original in the same sense.
Well, see, what was great for the Outlaw Country album for me was growing up in Nashville. You know, you're always just around country music all the time, you know, kind of can't get away from it in a lot of places. And were you around for the John Carter Cash stuff? Were you able to meet him and kind of talk to him at all?
No, I didn't go. It was Des and his wife Anastasia went.
Yeah.
Neil and I were invited. Actually, I mean, the whole band was invited, but for some reason I couldn't go. I can't remember why. I had something else going on.
LA traffic.
That might've been it. I was probably stuck in LA traffic. You get stuck there, you're going to be there a while.
It's funny. The first time I ever played in LA, it was the very first time I ever just saw a car flipped over, and it was just, and everybody's just driving past it like no big deal, but it was just a flipped over like SUV just in a lane. And people were probably mad at the guy for being flipped over.
I mean, they weren't zooming by, I'm sure. I'm sure they were going like 5 miles per hour at most.
Yeah, I mean,
they could pull someone over on the other side of the freeway, and your side of the freeway will be just jam-packed with people. And you know, I'm just coming back from my family's lake house up Paso Robles, and me and my girlfriend went up there. I fucked up my jet ski, and so I had to tow it home with me. They keep on letting water out of the lake, and it's, since I was up there last time, the lake level went down and I sucked some rocks through the intake, and that didn't sound too good. And luckily it still worked. So me and my girlfriend could get back to the dock, cause we were a good 3 miles away from it at least. And, but something wasn't sounding right. Fuck, bring it home. So I got to take that apart sometime soon and see what's wrong with that. But so we're towing that thing through and we almost got into an accident when a guy doing probably 120 in traffic was just zimming through traffic, and I had to slam on my brake because he was about to hit a gas truck or me. And luckily it didn't hit either one of us. But yeah, driving in LA sucks. I don't like it.
Yeah, no fun, especially when you're in a like 15 passenger van trying to get your band through on tour. You're just like,
you know what? If I'm the bus and I'm, you know, obviously I'm not driving, I don't care.
Right.
I sit in traffic, but when I'm driving, yeah, I do anything possible to avoid driving through LA.
Another question on the Outlaws thing, was that something, does that help your personal writing, kind of dissecting other songs and breaking them down to their kind of bare bones and rewriting them in kind of a Devil Driver way? Is that something that helps you, you know, when you move on to write other stuff?
You know, it might have. I'm not really sure if I used any kind of the techniques that I learned from rewriting those songs. It was interesting to me to, you know, when I sat down and I started rewriting them to see how much different they structured the songs compared to the way or the way I do it
right.
most of the time. And I remember thinking that I was going to try to implement that more into dealing with demons when we started writing for that. But I don't think I ever did. And, you know, the funny thing is a lot of these songs are songs that I've listened to many, many times. And until you actually go in and like and dissect them, you don't really notice it.
Yeah.
At least I don't. And like the one of the other songs that I really wanted to do was The Highwaymen by the Highwaymen. And it's four, you know, the song is just four different country singers singing the same verse all in a row. And, you know, I started rewriting that song and I was like, this is just not going to work with just Dez singing it. Like, we would literally have to get three guest vocalists to do this song to make it work. So that, you know, that didn't happen. We probably actually could have. Before then, I didn't think Dez was going to be able to find so many people to guest on the record.
Yeah.
But so I think we actually could have done that song, but that decision was made early on. So the question is yes and no. I might have used some of the techniques that I've learned on when doing that record in a subconscious way, but I don't remember doing it on purpose. Like, I'm going to structure a song like one of the songs on the Outlaw record. I don't think I did that.
Yeah, you get a very weird, if you get into some of that older country, you know, sometimes it's just like, it's like chorus, verse, over. And it's mm-hmm. like and it's like a minute and 47 seconds long, but it's like a gigantic, massive standard. It's insane how kind of simplistic some of that early stuff was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Speaking about, you know, kind of, one of the last tours you guys did was the, you know, Static X, I believe Dope was on it, and you guys, and I know that you guys pulled out some old Cold Chamber tracks. You know, how was it kind of diving into that stuff and playing it out for the first time?
Well, I was a little unsure about it at first.
Yeah.
But any uncertainty immediately went away after we did it at the first show. I mean, every day. That was a really good tour. Almost every day was sold out. I think actually every day was sold out except for maybe one or two. And those were really, really big venues that we got booked at, you know, venues that normally neither of our bands would, you know, have anything to do with it. But it was a really, really good tour. And a lot of people there. And everyone seemed to love it when we played those songs. And, you know, it was a nice breather, you know, for like Neil and I. We always kind of like, we start joking around because lately Dez doesn't really want to talk in between songs a whole lot. So we're just kind of like going from song to song to song. And we don't really have a whole lot of time to, you know, take a break and drink our beers that are always on our amps at every show. Because we're the only two guys in the band that drink. Everyone else is sober. And, or at least doesn't drink alcohol. And, you know, the songs are fairly easy to play and you got to change guitars because we used baritone guitars for those songs. And, it was fun, you know, and, I'm totally down to keep on playing them, you know, as long as the fans are into it, I don't mind.
Was that something where you wanted to kind of always keep Cold Chamber and Devil Driver separate? So that was maybe why you didn't want to add those songs to the set.
Yeah, and I guess I'm a little bit traumatized from the baby days of Devil Driver because in 2004 up until I would say like at least 2010, you know, nu metal was it was just really frowned upon. Like it kind of, it had its own little period in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like the whole metal crowd wanted nothing to do with it. Yeah. And it was odd. And, you know, and it was hard for Dez to get away from that. And I think there were a lot of people that didn't want to like Devil Driver because they didn't like Cold Chamber.
Yeah.
And it's, and now the funny thing is it's coming full circle. You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, I did have a lot of people, like when we did Ozfest in 04, coming up to us at the signing booth and be like, you know, I didn't want to like you guys, but I do.
Right.
And I think it was just because, like I said, like, it was like new metal got blacklisted all of a sudden, just, you know, it was just gone. Like, don't be in a new metal band. And it was, I guess it must have been, it kind of felt like, I guess it would have when, like, being in a hair metal band in the 80s and when Nirvana dropped.
Yeah.
You know, it just stopped. Maybe on a smaller level, you know, I'm kind of comparing apples and oranges a little bit, but it kind of felt like that.
It's pretty much apples to apples from my point of view.
Except for the point that grunge was never frowned upon, at least not from my point of view. Like, Nirvana was always cool. Soundgarden was always cool. Alice in Chains, definitely always cool, you know? Right. But new metal, except for, you know, there are bands that pushed through and got through it, like Korn.
Yeah.
But
I mean, they still had their low moments too, though.
Yeah, they did. You know, I kind of forgot about Korn for a little while. And I tell you the truth, I'm a big Korn fan. I like a lot of their stuff. And it took that dubstep record they did to regain my attention, because I'd never really heard dubstep before. I don't really listen to it anymore. It was like a little, like a phase for me. It got a little monotonous. Like, it all just kind of started sounding the same, but I liked it because I'm a big industrial fan. Like, I love industrial more than any other genre of music. It was, to me, it was like modern day industrial. It's just noises and beats and weird shit going on. I love that stuff. So when Korn did that record, my eyebrows definitely were raised. I'm like, all right, you know, and I kind of have never stopped listening to them since. So, I was a little bit afraid to play Cold Chamber songs. I didn't know how people were going to react to it. And yeah, and you know, I'm not a part of Cold Chamber. I'm a part of Devil Driver. And I was like, oh no, should we be crossing the streams? Is that a bad idea? Is the universe going to implode if we do this?
And it did. So thank you for coronavirus and everything else. So I'm pretty sure it's because you guys played Cold Chamber songs.
It totally fucked up the world. Look what happened. Played some Cold Chamber songs and fucking COVID-19 hit.
Well, I think it was the perfect tour to kind of bust them out. You didn't bust them out on a random Devil Driver tour. You busted out on a tour, a kind of a nostalgia tour with Static X and Dope and the, you know, the kind of the entire package was pulling from that late 90s, early 2000s era. So pulling it out of those shows, I think was probably perfect timing.
I totally agree. And Dope and Static X are bands that Dez played with Cold Chamber back in the day, you know, they're all LA bands.
Yeah.
And so I totally agree with that. But, and you know what, one of my all time favorite Cold Chamber song is Fiend. I think that's the best song they ever wrote. I would like it way more than Loco. I like Fiend is a really, really well written song. And it was one of Cold Chamber's bigger songs.
Yeah,
but that was one thing that I told Dez. I'm like, all right, if we're going to do these songs, we're playing Fiend. You know, like, that's all I asked. And yeah, I love that song. I love playing it. It's fun.
I was always a big fan of
it. I would do it more.
I was always a big fan of Big Truck. You know, that's where you got to go with that one.
Yeah, a lot of people like that song too.
Yeah, I mean, even towards the end of Cold Chamber, you know, I saw them with Slipknot opening. It was like Cold Chamber, Machine Head with a little opening band, Slipknot. And the places we would see was like packed out for Slipknot. Slipknot would leave and the place would, you know, half of the crowd would leave too. It was pretty insane, that kind of dark period of both Machine Head and Cold Chamber.
Yeah, Dez, he's told me some stories about that tour, and he told me the very first day, I don't think he knew much about Slipknot at all. They just got thrown onto the tour, and it was the first night of the tour, and he walks out to go see him, and he was just like, I guess his jaw was just on the floor, like, oh my God. And he actually walked up to the dressing room, and Meigs was sitting there, and he was like, dude, you got to see this. And I know that feeling a little bit, because we played one show back in the day. I think it was 2007, and we were opening up for Dimmu in the States. Fantastic tours. Another one of those tours, like, it was shortly after they released Puritanical. I think they were on the Death Cult Armageddon album cycle, and like every show was sold out. But for some reason, one show that we played at the Electric Factory in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
Yeah. I was about to say Pittsburgh, but no, it's Philadelphia. And Behemoth was opening. And I think I had heard of them. I had seen pictures of them in like metal magazines and online, but I don't think I had listened to them yet. And I went out and watched them, and I was just like, oh my God, like, this is one of the best live bands I've ever seen. And I remember walking into the dressing room, and all the guys were in there, and we're kind of starting to get ready for the show. I'm like, dude, you guys better make this show an 11 today, because that opening band, Behemoth, is fucking scary. Like, just scary good. It, like, you know, that was one of the only times I got a little intimidated by an opening band.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah.
There's nothing better, though, than going to a show for one band and then another band just completely blowing you away. You know, one time we went to see pop punk band Motion City Soundtrack, and they were on tour with a band called Chiodos, and we had never seen Chiodos before. And Craig Owens came out and was a complete rock star. And I was just like, it's one of those where you just kind of mesmerized and blown away. I even saw, like, My Chemical Romance opening for Story of the Year one time. And I was like, well, this is the band, you know, this band's going to be huge. But yeah, man, it's just awesome to go see shows and other bands that blow you away. And it's a very hard thing to do, to kind of win a crowd over of people that aren't there to see you.
Well, you know, that the same thing happened to me when I was in high school. I went to the Hollywood Palladium to go see, Lords of Acid was headlining, but I mainly went to go see KMFDM.
Nice.
And this little unknown band called Rammstein opened up.
Yeah.
And I had heard of them from the two songs that they had on the Lost Highway soundtrack, because I listened to that soundtrack to death when I was in high school. A lot of my friends did. And so I'm up front, and lights go down, and they open up with the song Rammstein. And, you know, it's just that slow dun 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 dun, 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 you know, and it's just kind of almost a weird song to open up with, because it's so slow. But, you know, they open up with that song. Till had that big, you know, metal trench coat on with his goggles with the laser pointer on it, and just burst into flames, you know, like maybe 20 seconds into it. And it's just like, I can just, the whole crowd was like, okay, the show's definitely over after these guys are done. Like, it was like after KMFDM and Lords of Acid, like, as much as I love them, they were just like, well, nothing to see here. You know, we just witnessed Rammstein. I think that was their first tour in the States. And they did some things on that show that I'd never seen before. Like, I remember the keyboardist Flake got one of those incandescent or fluorescent tube lights out and broke it over Till's bare chest during one of the songs. Never seen him do that again. I mean, that stuff inside there is toxic. I don't know if it was lit up. It wasn't like a dummy light or anything like that. It was lit up, and he just went and broke it right over his bare chest. That was like, you know, and being like 15 years old, I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I got to see them for the first time. I actually saw them two dates on the original Family Values tour with Korn, Limp Bizkit, and
Orgy, I saw that too.
And it was one of those things where you went in, you're like, yeah, Ice Cube was there. Yeah. And so you know, that's the fake dildo and you know, just spraying the crowd with whatever. And yeah, it was one of the more amazing shows I've ever seen. That's one of those one times where you dive into a band so much. Like, we had a German foreign exchange student in our school. So if I you know, rushed to him and I'm like, what do these lyrics mean? You know, and just trying to you know, decipher what Rammstein's talking about.
Yeah, my grandparents were full German, and when I was in high school, they would go to Germany maybe every couple of years to visit my relatives. So I gave them a list of Rammstein singles and albums. They only had two albums out at the point. Yeah. And I had both of the records, but they had all like six or seven, you know, singles, like, you know, like the ones that Metallica put out on the Black Album. You know, and they had B-sides on it and covers, but you couldn't get them in the States, you know? It's like, it was really hard to, you know, to get that stuff when I was a kid. And so I gave a list to my grandparents, and they came home with this red box set with six CD singles in it and a poster.
Nice.
And I remember I did the same thing with my grandmother. I had her start translating some of the lyrics. And I think some of them she didn't want to translate for me.
Yeah, I bet there. That's a.
She was like, yeah, and like my grandparents. I mean, they were pretty highly Catholic, conservative, and I think I was like, I always wondered, like, did my grandmother kind of regret bringing that home for me a little bit after she opened it, or after I opened it up? Because I opened it up at their house when, you know, they brought it for me, but.
There was a year that my, one of the first years I ever started working, my mom wanted to know what I wanted for Christmas. And I was like, I want these, you know, band t-shirts. And she's like, well, send me a list and I'll try to go find them. And that was when, you know, she would go to the local, I don't even think Hot Topic was around yet, but it was, you know, whatever store. And, I sent her a list of like Cannibal Corpse and Deicide and Obituary. And just all this. So I was late to Christmas. So when everybody, when I got there, I opened my presents in front of like the entire family, my Baptist grandmother that was the Sunday school teacher, and I'm pulling up my Tomb of the Mutilated t-shirt, like, thanks, Mom. You know, my grandparents were just like, oh my God.
I brought that album, Tomb of the Mutilated, to school when I was in middle school. I was in seventh grade. And you know, I was showing one of my friends in class, and my math teacher, who was actually really, she was cool and laid back, but she was like, let me see that. And I was just like, no, you know, it's just that corpse, lady corpse getting eaten out by a male corpse that's like chopped in half.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a pretty brutal album cover, especially for what year was this? Like, it must have been like 1994, 95, something like that.
Somewhere there, yeah.
And finally, she was just not letting me not show her that record. And finally, I pulled it out and I'm just like, dude, she's going to take it away from me. And she's just like, I think it caught her by surprise. I thought she was going to be like, try to be the cool teacher and be like, oh, I like that and whatever. She just, you know, hands it back to me like, probably not a good idea to keep bringing that to school, Mike. You know,
yeah, you might want to keep that one at home.
You might want to leave that one at home a little bit.
Yeah, it was, there weren't a whole, I mean, I went to a very uppity high school. So sometimes walking the hall with my Metal Up Your Ass t-shirt or a nice Deicide t-shirt, you know, I got sent to the principal's office for my Deicide shirt, you know, some stuff like that. But yeah, you know, it's just, it's fun to be young and be metalhead, right?
Yeah. My mom really, I had two shirts that my mom really freaked out on when I was a kid. And the first one was, once again, going back to a KMFDM concert. I went to go see KMFDM, and it was on Halloween, and this band Pig opened up. Yeah. And Pig is a solo project of a guy named Raven Watts that had a lot to do with KMFDM and some other industrial projects. And they had a shirt that said pig on the front, and I still have it. And it says find it, fuck it, forget it on the back. And dude, I mean, I'm pretty sure that song is about a guy getting screwed over by a girl. And probably it was Raymond. That's my guess when I looked into the lyrics when I was a kid. But I just didn't think anything of it. And I knew my mom wouldn't let me wear it to school because it had the word fucking on it. But, I mean, that almost turned into World War III at my house. She just couldn't believe that I bought that. And I just couldn't believe that she cared that much. And the ironic thing is, just a couple years ago, I have a friend named Duncan Wilkinson that lives in London. And he became friends with Raymond and did a remix for a remix at record of a pig. And he was like, you know, do you want to play guitars on this remix that I'm doing? And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I do. You know,
right.
KMFDM and Pig are, you know, two of my favorite industrial bands. And also it was like a way for me to connect with Raymond Watts, you know, and, yeah. You know, I confronted my mom after I did. I'm like, you remember that band Pig where he threw the fit about the shirt, said find it, fucking forget it on it? She's like, yeah, well, I just collaborated with the guy on the song.
Nice. And, what did mom have to say about that?
I mean, she's over it now. My parents are very well broken in. I'm the youngest of four kids. And my oldest brother and sister, they were like straight A students. My oldest brother was valedictorian of his high school. Like, pretty ideal kids to have. And then they had me and my other brother, and yeah, we were a bit more of a handful than the other ones. So yeah, my parents, they're very well broken and they're pretty mellow now.
Did the grandmother that translated the Rammstein stuff, is she still with us?
No, actually all my grandparents are gone, unfortunately.
Did they at least get to see you play or knew that you had gotten, you know, to tour and things like that?
One of my grandfathers, yes. My dad's dad, he lived the longest, and he never came to a show or anything like that, but he knew what I was. Actually, no, I take it back. My grandmother, too. I remember my mom calling me when I was in Nottingham, England once. You know, and my grandmother wasn't doing so well, and she was pretty old. And I remember, you know, she was like, you know, I know you can't come home or anything, but, you know, you might want to call her. And it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to call her. So I called her up, and we talked for a little while, thinking that it was going to be the last time I talked to her. The funny thing is, she lived for like 2 or 3 years after that.
So, oh, damn it, Grandma.
Yeah, but my other two grandparents, they passed away before Devil Driver was around, and so they never got to see it. They wouldn't have really cared that much. My family is very supportive of what I do, but they don't have their noses in it at all. Right. Like my dad will come to some shows, and you know, he used to have a friend that, you know, that he actually reunited with a friend. Unfortunately, this guy passed away as well, but they would go to concerts together when they were a kid, and they saw Black Sabbath, they saw Led Zeppelin, Cream, you know, all these bands in the 60s and 70s together. So he would bring them to my shows, and those would be like my dad's friend that would come to the show. Sometimes one of my brothers would come, sometimes my sister, when she would bring her family. But you know, it's one of the things I would make fun of some of the older members and other members of Devil Driver. It's like when they go through their hometown,
yeah,
it's like it's a whole ordeal. Like the mom comes, the dad comes, the cousins come, their kids come, the whole family comes, and they're like, we'll be there at 1 o'clock to see you. And it's like, fuck, man. You know, like, I don't want to be babysitting these people, you know, from 1 o'clock until whenever right. We go on at 9 or 10. My family has never been like that. They're like, if you don't want us to come to a show, we won't come to a show. And you know what? There won't be any hard feelings whatsoever. You know, my dad has called me and be like, you know, and LA shows are stressful sometimes, you know, yeah. And, you know, everyone wants on the guest list. We don't have room. It's just kind of a pain in the ass playing LA. And, you know, my dad's like, hey, you know, what do you think about me coming to the show? I'm like, Dad, this is just isn't a good one. Like I'm going to be so busy with interviews. I'm going to be doing this, you know, I got other friends coming out that I'm going to have to babysit and hang out with and, you know, record label people, whatever. And they're like, yeah, maybe next time. And he's just like, okay, cool. You know, see you when you get home, you know? And dude, I am so thankful for that. It makes things so much easier. Like our old drummer, John, and all the three guys that aren't in the band anymore, they're all from Boston. They grew up together. So whenever we played Boston, you know, it's like every single person, all three of their families would be cruising out to the show. And I could just see the stress, you know, emulating out of their pores all day, you know, and, but not my family. They're just like, whatever. My mom has been to, I think she came and saw me once.
Yeah.
But and it's just not my mom's thing. You know, she's seen me play. She's, not enjoyable for her. You know, my parents are both in their 70s, you know, they've worked their ass off their whole life and now they're in their chill time. So, you know, let them chill. And they live a mile away from me, so we see each other all the time anyway.
Nice. I think the last time you came on, we talked about your dad's hardware store. And after the show posted, a good friend of mine that moved out to California years and years ago, she was like, oh, I know his dad. I love his dad. You know, like talking about the
Did
the
he tell me about store. This?
I don't know. I don't think I did. No. No. Friend of mine, I think she had bought some blinds or something, and she was like, he either said something about you being in Devil Driver or you were there or something, but it just kind of came full circle of like, I shop at that hardware store. I was like, well, that's
no
awesome.
Shit.
Yeah. So yeah. It was cool, man. It's, you know, she's a very good friend, and it was just that whole small world thing, I guess.
It's kind of a staple in Torrance where I live. Yeah. And while the riots were going on over here after the George Floyd thing, the whole mall near my house boarded up everything. And they even took city buses and barricaded all the parking lots.
Oh, wow.
So no cars could get through into the parking lot. So every, you know, for like 3 or 4 days, it was like that. And, you know, I was like, man, you know, dad, we better board the store up. And, you know, we had some incidents there, and I actually had to file a police report from, getting some threats up from customers, and they've, you know, customers have been getting thrown out of the store for being rude. Like this pandemic hit and like, I have literally lost all faith in humanity. Like people, you know, something like this happens and people just turn into the biggest pieces of shit on the face of the earth. It's insane.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but there's a selected few. And, you know, when I filed the police report, the guy, you know, I was talking to the cop on the phone and I was telling him what happened. And, you know, he was like, well, you know, I told him, you know, what business it was. And he was like, well, you know, you guys are a mom and pop staple in this town. We're going to do whatever we can to make sure everything is good. And, you know, like they literally put patrol, you know, going by our store when it was closed every night, like cops would cruise by there like 2 or 3 times in a night just to make sure everything was okay, along with all the other businesses that are in the area. But yeah, everyone, that was one of the things I couldn't get away with shit when I was a kid because everyone knew my parents, you know?
Yeah.
And mainly my dad, because he is a very well-liked person. He does a lot of favors for people and he's run that place for, God, I think 44 years now.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I couldn't get away with shit. If I was doing something wrong, oh, that's John's kid. Phone call. I'd get home and that look on his face, just like, you know, and yeah, my dad was pretty, he was a very strict dad. He's like my best friend now, but he was not a friend. He was not the friend parent. He was more like a drill sergeant when I was growing up. So you didn't want to piss him off.
Yeah, yeah. My, you know, it's funny. My dad growing up, it's like he was very strict. And then the day I turned 18, it was like a light switch. And he never redirected me. He never got on to me. He never. It was the weirdest thing because he was like like on me until the day I was 18, and then boom, it was over with. It's a very weird phenomenon. I don't know what happened.
Their parenting is done.
Right. He's like, poof, give me.
They're like, I'm done being a parent. He's on his own. You know, if he wants advice or help, I'm here. But yeah, it's even with some of my friends that still go into the store. Like the guy, I have a friend named Dan that grew up down the street from me. And he shapes all my surfboards for me now. And he has to go in the hardware store from time to time. And he's like, what's up with your dad? He's like a completely different person than when he was when we were kids. Like he's fun and mellow. Like I think all my friends were afraid of my dad.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. he was very intimidating when he wanted to be.
Hey, you got a question here from Priscilla. She asks you, any new gear or toys?
Yes, I do have some new toys. I just got something today. Well, first of all, I do have I got a little bit of a problem with my amp collection over there, and I just got that Angle last week. It's the Angle Artist Edition. I used to use Angles all the time when I was in Europe. I'd always rent, I think it was a Powerball, when we would go over there when I was still using real heads live. Now I just use my Axe FX. But they make some good stuff, but it's like their most simple amp, the Artist Edition, for me, is hands down the best sounding. It's just simple two channels, whatever, but it sounds fantastic. And I just got this today in the mail.
What is that bad boy?
This is called a channel in a box. Steve Evitz got me or convinced me to get one of these. It's the way I record guitars now is I have, you know, I'm in my studio right now, but right outside my studio, I have an isolation room with a 412 cabinet in there. So I hook up a bunch of mics into that. It goes, you know, everything goes through my ceiling here. And then I have this nifty little summing box made by Black Lion Audio. So I'll hook up like anywhere between 5 to 8 microphones on that thing, depending on what I can fit in there. And I won't use them all at the same time, but I'll get the amp kind of where I want with a 57. And then I'll just start blending in all the other mics. So I don't have to do it. You know, I just like the way it sounds better when I do it analog.
Right.
So I'm blending all those mics together in an analog world, and then I'm going into my DAW with it, and I just kind of commit to it. And if I want to change it, I can always reamp it. But I want to use this. It's basically a channel off the 9098, I think it is, mixing board. It's made by Rupert Neve. And so I can have a little bit of EQ and compression after the summing box into my computer.
Nice. If I move my camera around too much, you might see a washing machine. So
is that what you got back there?
Because it's all smoke and mirrors over here at the Talk To Me compound.
Well, you know, you gotta stay clean.
What was the reasoning on moving the album up? Did we talk about that?
No, honestly, I don't know.
You're on a need to know basis.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I've been so busy with other things, you know, everyone is at home writing right now. I'm getting hit up for mixing, producing, to the point in the first time in my life that I've had to turn it down because turn down some things because I'm like, yeah, I can do it, but you might have to wait 6 months until I get around to it. And I just finished recording this band called Void Vader, based out of LA. Yeah. Lucas, the guitar player singer, he filled in for me at Ozfest, Mexico, a couple years ago because I had to be at my brother's wedding that day. And I was his best man. So we flew him from LA to Mexico with the boys, and he played one show and then flew back to LA, and then I flew from Austin, you know, back onto the tour. I did not produce that. I did not, and I'm not mixing it either. They just basically, you know, they could kind of self-produced, and he just wanted me to record guitars here, and then we recorded guitars, and then he's like, can we do bass here too? And I'm like, yeah, sure, we can do bass. And after that, he's like, can we do vocals here too? Yeah, sure, let's do vocals. And that was Lucas is an extremely good guitar player. Definitely one of the best guitar players I've ever seen in the metal scene. He's awesome. And now I just got files from a band called Tortured Saint out of Toronto.
Okay.
And this will be the second record I've mixed by them. They, one of the guys in the band is friends with, my rep for my string company, SIT. His name's Hoogie. And he's the bass tech for Shinedown as well. Really, really cool guy. And so he hit me up a couple years ago and was like, you know, we check out this band, Tortured Saint, you know, a friend of mine is in the band. They want you to mix it. And it's like, because it was coming from Hoogie, I wasn't going to say no. It's like, yeah, right. of course I'm going to do it. You know, you're you. I'm not going to say no. And I got the files and I was a little bit scared because, you know, they're a local band. They're not signed and you never know what you're going to get. And there's a lot of bad metal bands out there. You know, I've gotten so many demos over the last 16 years. And honestly, I would say maybe 4 or 5 I liked. And, but when I heard Tortured Saint and I started checking out all the files, I was extremely impressed, but I hadn't unmuted the singer yet. Like I just listened to the drums, guitar and bass. And then I unmuted the singer and then I was blown away again. Like, I had never met the guy. I'd never seen him live, but I could just tell from his projection and his ferocity and his vocals that I was just like, dude, this guy is fucking pissed off. And it sounded so good. And I had so much fun mixing that record. And Dez heard that record when I, you know, they gave me a little video teaser to put on my Instagram. And I think I actually mastered that record too. Which I don't do anymore. I don't deal with mastering anymore. Too many different streaming services. I don't like it. So, I put this teaser of the record out on my Instagram, and Dez heard it and was like, "Hey, dude, you mix this, blah blah blah." And you know, he was the one that got me, you know, the gig with Wednesday 13 to produce and mix their record, and we're going to do another record in January. So you never know where things are going to lead, you know?
And, oh, yeah. It's one thing into another.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, like working with Wednesday, I didn't really know what I was getting into because I had heard the Murder Dolls back in the day. I wasn't a big fan. I did see one of their last shows on Halloween at the Roxy. And I actually really did like them live. I thought Wednesday was an incredible frontman. And, I agreed to do the record and I went and saw them at the Whiskey and once again, completely blown away. Like, I don't know why Wednesday 13 isn't as big as Rob Zombie.
Right.
Because he is like everybody on that Static X tour, you know, it was, you know, Raven Black and then Wednesday 13 and then Dope and then us and then Static X. And to tell you the truth, a lot of the crew on that tour from all the bands, you know, I had a couple of them come up to me like, dude, you guys are fucking awesome live, but Wednesday's band, they're definitely like the best part of the show for me. And I'm like, dude, me too. I totally agree. Like he puts so much effort into his shows. It's really, really fun to watch. And they've gotten heavier over the years too.
Yeah,
they're not like this punk band that they were back in the day. And, you know, once again, I just had so much fun working with those guys and I was really blown away of how, like, I'd kind of pushed them aside too. You know, I never really gave Wednesday 13 the time of day.
Yeah.
And we had we had done Soundwave together in Australia. I don't think I ever got the chance to watch them, but I would always see, you know, the Wednesday 13 guys. They're kind of hard not to notice,
right.
You know, walking around backstage and whatnot. Never talked to them. And not until Jeff and I did this guitar clinic tour many years ago in the UK,
okay.
With when I was with that company Blackstar, and we played our last show in Glasgow, Scotland, and you know, the band went to the airport, Jeff and I got a hotel, and there's this venue that we play there sometimes called The Garage, and okay. They just turn it into a club, you know, from time to time. And so I'm like, all right, let's go to The Garage. And Wednesday was there and his guitar player, Ramon. And Ramon and I had a big, long conversation about Carcass's record, Heartwork.
Oh, what a great record.
Yeah, like, if I ever find someone that likes that record as much as I do, because to me, that's the best death metal record of all time. That's like, yeah. That's the Black Album for death metal.
I agree.
And no one will ever top it. I don't care what anyone puts out. Carcass, Heartwork, and Doth, The Hinders.
Yeah.
Those are my two favorite death metal records. And I guess Ramon and I just sat there and drank beers and talked about Carcass for probably like 2 hours straight. And, you know, I talked to Wednesday a fair amount too that day, and didn't talk to him again for probably like 4 or 5 years until Dez suggested I produce that record. And I don't think any of us really remembered that night very well. We were pretty hammered, but we got along really well on that one. It was a lot of fun.
I remember when I had Jeff Walker of Carcass on the podcast, I was arguing with
him. Yeah?
I argued with him that Heartwork was his best album, and he wanted to tell me, I'm trying to get the name right, but he was telling me that their best album was
Necroticism.
I believe so. Yeah. I think that's what he was going with. I was like, nah, it's Heartwork.
Nope, it's Heartwork.
It's just like it's almost like the prototype, like metalcore album sound. Like it sounds like every album that came out 10 years later.
Yeah. And it's kind of like the Meshuggah syndrome. Like Meshuggah, in a way, they're gent and they open up the gates for that genre, but no one really calls them gent.
Right.
And the same thing with Carcass. Like, you're right. It is kind of got a metalcore vibe to it. But no one would ever call Carcass metalcore.
No, not at all. But yeah, it's just funny how that album sounds so good. And, you know, you could almost put it up against, you know, the Killswitches and whatnot that came out years later for like ABM, and they probably sound pretty similar.
Yeah, I love that record. It is so good. And I can't believe how well Jeff Walker can still sing. We did 70,000 tons of metal with them. And our guitar player, Neil, wasn't really familiar with Carcass. And, I mean, he's into a lot of metal like that, but he had never really taken the time to listen to him. And, you know, I was like, dude, come on, we're going to go watch Carcass. And, like, Jeff Walker's screams are still just so fucking brutal, you know? They were playing the first track on that album, Buried Dreams.
Yep.
They were playing that, and Jeff just breaks out this massively long scream, you know, coming from this guy that, God, I mean, he must be in his 50s at this point, right? Early 50s, I would say.
Yeah, it's got to be early to mid 50s, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I just look over at Neil and it's like jaws on the floor, just like, good God, these, like, it's awesome. I love that band.
Yeah, great band. Back to Wednesday 13, he has one of the best things going on tour. With the fans of Wednesday 13 will bring him just boxes of action figures. Just like, or he could just be like, you know what, man, I really need this one specific He-Man. And in like a week and a half, someone shows up with it. So he's got the best gig out there when it comes to collecting toys.
Yeah. And you know, he's got that Wednesday's World show he's been doing, and he's got 3 episodes. And honestly, dude, me and my girlfriend, I mean, we have so much fun watching those. Like that guy is such a character. It's crazy. I mean, Wednesday is probably one of the most unique people I think I've ever met. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
In a very wonderful way. And I mean, me and my girlfriend just get absolutely, it was like, you know, when he sends me the episodes, he's like, man, you know, make sure you get high as fuck before you watch it. That's key. And yeah, so we just smoke a shitload of pot and watch away, and it's fucking hilarious. I love that show. I get so excited when he makes a new one.
Yeah, it's always fun, man. I love his, you know, his North Carolina accent too. It probably sounds a lot like mine, but it's just fun to hear him kind of, yeah, man, you know, when I grew up in a trailer and all this other stuff, and then he comes out with like Condolences, and you know, which was probably one of my favorite albums that year.
Yeah. That's definitely the album that has some songs that really caught my attention.
Yeah,
compared to his older stuff. But yeah, he's got this, and like I said, I love industrial music, and he's got this nice blend between goth, metal, industrial, and it's you know, he's also actually into country from what I remember.
Yeah,
you don't really hear it in some of his music, but yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised when I really started to dig into his catalog before I ended up doing that record.
Yeah, man, I can't wait to hear it. That's it's funny, man. We've hit about an hour. I think last time I talked to you, we hit about an hour, and you're very easy to talk to, man. I appreciate that. Sometimes it's like fighting people, trying to get answers out of people.
Not me.
Not you at all, man. But well, as we kind of wrap this one up, you know, Dealing with Demons, part one, volume one, however you want to say it, October 2nd. Looks like part two is going to be out early next year. And then, were you saying you're basically already writing for a new album, or are you just writing songs?
I always write, and some of the stuff, you know, it may or may not end up on a Devil Driver record. I did this record for a music library with some of the old guys in Devil Driver years ago, and they ended up calling it Terror Metal. It was for a music library called Extreme Music. And I've always wanted to put out another one. And I've, you know, I start working on it, and then our record cycle's over, and I have to kind of concentrate on Devil Driver again. And so I've got quite a few songs for that. They only accept, like, I think you have to write 10 songs at a time. Otherwise, they won't accept the record. Like, you have to give them, like, a full 10 songs, vocals, everything. And I do want to do another record like that. And I do have a bunch of songs for it, but I just haven't had a chance to finish them. But Neil's he's been writing a lot of songs for the next Devil Driver. And, but with the way things are going and having a new Devil Driver record out coming out in October, and then the next one, I think might be coming out in March. Don't quote me on that. But sometime early next year. And so it's going to be a while until Devil Driver goes in the studio again, I think. And I want to say that there's actually going to be some leftover songs as well after, we recorded 20 songs, and I believe we're only releasing 17 between the two records.
Okay.
So there's actually going to be three more. I don't know when or if they're going to get released. I think they'll be getting released eventually. So there's a lot of stuff coming out.
So when will the Spritzer industrial album come out? You got the perfect last name for an industrial album.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't Spritzer. Sound right for me. Yeah, well, if you say it with a German accent,
yeah, you got to.
Kind of cool. But yeah, the Americans don't know how to say it right. They're always saying Spritzer, or no one knows how to pronounce it.
It's funny trying to spell it, because you have to remember that it's I before E, except after Spritzer. So, like,
well, in the German language, if you have an E and an I together,
yeah,
you pronounce the second one.
Oh, okay, there we go.
And I don't think there's any exceptions to the rule in that language. So
no, there's no exceptions to any rule in Germany.
Exactly.
Well, cool, Mike, man. Well, thanks for taking the time tonight. Thanks for coming on, doing it live. And we'll get this out podcast form soon. And it's up on YouTube and all that great stuff. And it's always fun catching up with you, man.
Good to see you, man. Hopefully once this COVID thing is over, I'll see you at a show soon.
Yes, I will be out. I took shows for granted for way too long, and I'll go to as many as I can now.
Yeah, I'm hoping hoping everyone feels that way once things open up again.
All right, man. Well, again, we said the new Devil Driver Dealing with Demons Volume 1 out October 2nd. Mike, thanks for taking the time tonight.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon, bro.
See ya.